Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
I've been putting off writing this for about 3 months now. I kept telling myself I was waiting until I felt ready, but I don't think I'm ever going to feel ready. So here it is. This goes back to the summer before my sophomore year of high school, when my friend Dara invited a small group of us to her grandmother's lake house in northern Wisconsin. There were 4 of us. Me, Dara, a girl named Simon who I'd known since the 4th grade, and a quieter girl named Claire who moved to our school the previous fall. We weren't all equally close. Dara and I were best friends. Simon and I got along well, and Claire was sort of a recent addition to our circle. Friendly enough, a little hard to read. Dara liked her, so we all went along with it. I want to be clear about something before I go any further. Claire was not strange in any obvious way. She didn't set off alarm bells. She was soft-spoken and a little spacey, the kind of person you'd describe as an old soul. She had this habit of staring out windows for long stretches that I always chalked up to her being an artistic type. She painted. She talked about painting constantly. That should have been my first hint that I had no idea what kind of art she was actually making. The lake house was gorgeous and old, the kind of place that crackles and settles at night in ways that sound almost intentional. We slept in a long upstairs room with 4 cots lined up near the windows. The lake was visible from there, a flat black mirror after dark. The whole place had a timeless quality, like nothing outside of the property really existed. By the end of the first day, I had already forgotten what day of the week it was. I think that's just what places like that do to you.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
The first odd thing happened on the second night. I've always been a light sleeper in unfamiliar places. My mom used to joke that I could hear a house thinking, so it didn't surprise me much when I opened my eyes sometime after 2 with no particular reason for it. I just opened my eyes. The room was still dark and I could hear the other 3 breathing in different rhythms. I lay there for a few minutes and was almost back under when I noticed Claire's cot was empty. I figured she was using the bathroom down the hall. A minute passed, then 5. I told myself to go back to sleep. I don't know why I didn't. Instead, I got up and walked to the top of the stairs. The kitchen light was on. Claire was standing at the table with her back to me, completely still, not doing anything. No glass of water in front of her, no snack. Just standing there in the dark on the other side of that light. I watched her for what felt like a full minute before I crept back to bed without saying a word. I convinced myself she was sleepwalking. I almost convinced myself I'd imagined it. The following afternoon, I couldn't find my journal. I'd kept one since I was 12 and brought it everywhere. Wrote in it every day without fail. I tore through my bag twice. Dara helped me look. Claire suggested I might have left it in the car without meeting my eyes when she said it. I remember that detail clearly, though I didn't think much of it at the time. We spent that afternoon on a kayak tour around the lake, and I forgot about the journal until we were eating dinner. By then, I was just relieved to stop thinking about it. I'd find it eventually. That night I fell asleep before everyone else. I woke again around 3, same as before, and this time I heard something, soft and rhythmic, coming from the direction of the cots. I tilted my head slowly and let my eyes adjust. Claire was sitting upright in her cot with her back to me. Her arms were moving in a slow, repeated motion. She was drawing. I didn't say anything. I watched until I felt my heart beating in my ears, and then I deliberately slowed my breathing and closed my eyes. It was 20 minutes before I heard her lie back down. I did not sleep again. The last full day, the three of us went into town. Claire said she wasn't feeling well and stayed behind. We were gone for most of the afternoon, and when we got back, Dara's grandmother pulled me aside and told me Claire had spent the entire time upstairs. Hadn't come down once. Hadn't eaten. Hadn't said a word to her. There was nothing alarming about that on its own. Her grandmother's tone made me uneasy, as if she was hinting at something more. I couldn't let it go after that. I waited until the others went down to the dock at sunset and went upstairs and opened Claire's suitcase. There was a sketchbook at the bottom, tucked under folded clothes. My journal was in there with it. So were two photographs, the kind printed from a phone, of me asleep. In both of them, my face was close to the camera. My expression was slack, and the lighting had the particular flatness of a phone flashlight turned low. Someone had been standing over me while I slept and photographing my face. I opened the sketchbook. I want to be precise here, because precision is important. It wasn't violent. That would have been easier to categorize. It was portraits. Page after page of portraits. All of me. All extraordinarily detailed. I'm not an artist, and even I could tell they were technically accomplished. But the detail wasn't what bothered me. It was the expression she'd given me, in every single one. My face, rendered over and over again. Always wearing an expression I couldn't quite name. Not afraid, not angry. It just looked like I was waiting for something. Like I knew something was coming and had already accepted it. The last drawing was different from the others. It was from behind. Me sitting at a table. In this house, from the vantage point of the doorway. The table was set for one, outside the window in the drawing, where the lake should have been. She had drawn nothing, just blank white space where the water was supposed to be. Underneath it, in handwriting I recognized from past notes in class, she had written my full name, first and last, and underneath that, I have been waiting for this. I stood there for a moment too long. I should have put the sketchbook down and walked away immediately. But my hands weren't cooperating. I was still holding it when I heard the stairs creak. I don't know how long she'd been there. Her expression didn't change when our eyes met. No surprise. No embarrassment. No alarm. She just looked at me with that same quiet, patient stillness she always had. The one I'd always read as thoughtfulness. I understood it differently now. She glanced at the sketchbook in my hands, then back at my face. And something shifted almost imperceptibly at the corners of her mouth. Not a smile, exactly. Something that came before a smile. Neither of us said anything. I became acutely aware of how far I was standing from the door and how close she was to it. I was looking for my journal, I finally said. My voice came out steadier than I expected. I know, she said. That was it. That was all she said. Then she stepped aside from the doorway, leaving it open, and walking slowly back down the hall toward the bathroom. I listened to the footsteps until I heard the click of the door. I put the sketchbook back, picked up my journal, and went downstairs without looking back. I told Dar privately. Dar's grandmother was on the phone with Claire's mother within the hour. We were on the road before it was fully dark. Dara told me later that Claire had apparently become fixated on a different girl the previous year, before she moved to our school. She didn't have the details, and I didn't push for them. I avoided Claire for the rest of high school. I thought about Claire occasionally, the way you think about things that scared you when you were young. Distantly. Almost nostalgically. Then 3 months ago, I got a follow request from an account with no username. Just a string of numbers. The profile photo was black. No posts. 11 following. When I clicked on the following list to see if I recognized anyone, the first account on it was mine. I declined the request. The account disappeared by the next morning. I've made my profile private since then. I don't know if it was her. I don't know how I'd ever know. I'm writing this partly to have a record of everything and partly because putting it into words makes it feel more real. And for some reason, right now, I need it to feel real. I keep coming back to that drawing. The window. The white space where the lake should have been. I think about what it means to be observed by someone before you know you're being observed. The portrait already finished before you sat down to be painted. I don't have a way to end this. I'm just going to stop here. My family has a tradition that sounds stupid until you're the one doing it. Every Thanksgiving, we rent a property somewhere remote. A farm, a lake house, whatever my Uncle Dale can find on short notice. And we spend 4 days doing absolutely nothing productive. No phones at dinner, no talking about work, no leaving early. It sounds peaceful. It isn't. There are 10 of us when everyone shows up, and we are not a peaceful family. This particular year, Dale found a working orchard in rural Pennsylvania. Not a farm stay, not a bed and breakfast, an actual working orchard that the owners rented out in the off-season for extra money. About 40 acres of apple trees arranged in long, perfect rows, a main farmhouse that smelled like wood polish and old rugs, and one smaller guest cottage positioned maybe 100 yards away from the property's eastern edge. The nearest town was a 20-minute drive down a road that was really just two tire tracks pressed into the gravel. It was the kind of place that looked beautiful in photographs and slightly wrong in person.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The trees were too uniform. The rows went back further than you could see. We arrived Wednesday evening. 10 people across 3 cars, and immediately did what my family always does. Claimed sleeping spots, argued about who got which bathroom, and started drinking. My cousins Petra and Wes set up a card table in the kitchen before the luggage was even inside. My grandmother installed herself in the armchair closet to the fireplace and did not move from it for the next 12 hours. I'm 23, youngest adult in the family by 4 years, which means I spend most of these trips floating between conversations, not fully belonging in any of them. I wandered outside around 10 the first night just to get some quiet, and that's when I noticed a light. It was moving between the trees, just a soft white glow, low to the ground. Moving in a direction that didn't make sense for an animal. Too steady. Too deliberate. I watched it for maybe 30 seconds before it winked out. And I went inside and didn't say anything because it was probably a reflection or a neighbor with a flashlight. And I didn't want to be the person who ruined Thanksgiving by being paranoid about a light. Thursday was fine. Thursday was great, actually. We ate too much. Dale deep-fried a turkey in the driveway and nearly took his eyebrow off. My mom cried twice. Once happy. And once not, which is her personal record for the holiday. We went to bed late and full, and I slept without dreaming. Friday is when things started to feel off. It was small at first. My cousin Petra mentioned at breakfast that she heard footsteps on the cottage porch around 3 in the morning. She assumed it was Wes coming back from the main house, but when she asked him about it, he said he hadn't been asleep since midnight. They both laughed it off. Old buildings, probably. Pipes. We were in the country. There were animals. Then Dale found the gate to the orchard standing open. He was certain he latched it the night before because he'd specifically gone out to do it after reading something in the rental agreement about liability. He latched it again. By afternoon, it was open again. That evening, I walked to the guest cottage to return a phone charger I borrowed from my Aunt Reva and noticed something I couldn't immediately explain. The motion sensor light above the cottage door, the one triggered by steps on the porch, was on. But the porch was empty. I stood there looking at it for a moment, and then I looked out at the orchard, and the rows of trees looked back at me, perfectly still, perfectly dark. I started doing something I'm not proud of. Every time we gathered for a meal, I counted heads. 10. I kept counting to make sure we were at 10. I don't know exactly when I started doing it or why, but by Friday dinner, I was doing it compulsively. Touching each chair back as people settled in like I was taking inventory. 9. I counted again. 9. I walked through the main house looking for whoever was missing and found my cousin Marcus in the bathroom and felt my shoulders drop about 4 inches. 10. I was losing it. I laughed at myself quietly and sat down and poured myself a glass of wine. After dinner, Dale brought up the gate again, and this time his voice had lost the humor it carried at breakfast. He said he found footprints on the other side of it. Boot prints, adult-sized, leading in from the road and then tracking along the outside edge of the orchard toward the house. He followed them until they disappeared into the grass near the guest parking area. Nobody said much. My grandmother said it was probably just a local cutting the property, which was a perfectly reasonable explanation, and I wanted to believe it. But I kept thinking about the motion sensor light. I kept thinking about how the boot prints had gone toward the house and not away from it. I volunteered for the pull-out sofa that night so Reva and her husband could have the bedroom. This put me in the main living room, 8 feet from the door, and I lay there for a long time listening to the house settle and the wind move through the orchard and trying very hard to sleep. I woke up at 2:47 a.m. for no reason I could identify. The fire was down to embers, the room was dark, and there was someone standing outside the front window. I could see the outline of the head and the shoulders in the glass, backlit by nothing, just slightly darker than the darkness behind it. I didn't move. I could not make myself move. I watched the shape for what felt like 3 or 4 minutes, perfectly still, and I tried to convince myself it was a tree branch or a shadow, or my own tired brain manufacturing a threat. And then the shape turned its head, very slowly, and looked directly at the window. I screamed. I'm not ashamed of it. I screamed and hit the lamp and woke up the entire house in about 6 seconds. Dale came downstairs with a flashlight and his hunting knife, and when he opened the front door, there was nobody there. But the motion sensor above the door was on, and in the flower bed beneath the front window, in the soil that had thawed slightly during the day, there were 2 boot prints facing the glass. Fresh, deep, like someone had been standing there for a long time. We spent the rest of the night in shifts. Lights on, doors locked. All 10 of us accounted for and awake and not saying much. Wes called the non-emergency police line, and an officer came out at 6 a.m. and walked the perimeter and said he'd drive through the area more often. But there's nothing he could charge anyone with. We left Sunday morning, a full day early. 10 people, 3 cars. I counted everyone into their vehicles before we pulled out, standing in the gravel driveway with the orchard at my back, not turning around. The rental company refunded us half the stay without us even asking, which I didn't find comforting. It suggested this happened before. It suggested they already had a policy for it. I've thought about those boot prints every day since. How deep they were, how still whoever made them must have been standing while we were asleep inside, while I was 8 feet away from the other side of the thin glass. I've thought about how they were facing in, not walking, not leaving, just standing there, watching in the dark between the trees.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I filed it away as something I'd never fully understand and tried to move on. That lasted about 3 weeks. That's when my Aunt Reva called me, her voice doing something I'd never heard it do before, going very quiet and very flat at the same time. The way people talk when they're trying not to panic out loud. She said the police had contacted her, not about the orchard, about her ex-husband, a man named Gary who she left 8 years ago and never talked about, not once in all the years I'd known her. Apparently Gary had been picked up at a traffic stop about 2 counties over from that property. 2 days after we left, there was a knife in his glove box. There was also a handwritten list. She wouldn't tell me everything on it, but she told me enough. Our names were on it. All 10 of us. Hers was circled. I want to start by saying Dana and I talk about it sometimes. Even now. Not often. Maybe once or twice a year. Usually in February, when the cold gets a specific kind of gray and the trees go skeletal again. We'll be sitting somewhere ordinary, her kitchen table, my car in the parking lot, and one of us will say, that winter, and we both know exactly which one. We were 23, both of us working dead-end jobs in a town that felt like it exhaled everything interesting about itself years before we arrived. Dana was a substitute teacher. I was doing inventory at a hardware store. We'd been best friends since college, and ended up in the same nowhere place people sometimes do. Pulled by cheap rent and inertia. The trail was her idea. She'd read about it in some local outdoors blog. This converted railroad corridor through the woods outside of town. Old trestle bridge over a creek. Good for photos, the blog said. It was a Monday in February, and we both had the day off. And the sky was that pale, washed-out blue that makes you feel guilty for staying inside. I don't know why I remember pulling into the parking area so clearly. Dana was already out of my car before I had the key out, hiking boots crunching the frozen gravel, her breath coming out in little clouds. The trail was beautiful in a desolate way, bare hardwoods on either side, ground frozen solid, sound muffled except for our voices and the occasional bird. We talked about everything and nothing. Her students, a guy I'd been seeing who never texted back, what we were going to do with our lives. The kind of conversation that fills the lungs. The bridge appeared gradually through the trees. Old iron trestle, maybe 150 feet across, spanning the creek below. The wood planking between the rails was weathered and there were gaps, and you could see the frozen creek 30 or 40 feet down. It looked like a photograph. Dana had her phone out before we even reached it. We crossed slowly, stopping in the middle. The wind came through the valley hard and direct, and I remember zipping my jacket higher. Below us, the creek ice had that blue-green color of deep cold. I took some pictures too. I texted one to my mom. She replied with the heart emoji. I don't know exactly when I noticed them. That's the thing I've come back to so many times. In the dark. In therapy once for about 6 months. There's no clean moment. It was just suddenly there, on the near end of the bridge, the end we'd come from, standing at the point where the trestle met the trail. He hadn't been there when we crossed. Or maybe he had and we didn't look back. He was an ordinary looking man. That's what I always land on. Medium height, medium aged, wearing a dark jacket. He had his hands in his pockets. He was looking at us. People hike trails. People cross bridges. I told myself this immediately, automatically. The way your brain reaches for the explanation that lets you stay calm. But he didn't cross. He just stood there. Something about the stillness of him. The way he wasn't fidgeting. Wasn't checking his phone. Wasn't doing the things a person does when they're simply waiting. Something about that stillness pressed against inside my chest like a thumb. Dana, I said. Yeah, she said. She'd already seen him. We were in the middle of the bridge. To get back to the parking area, we had to go toward him. The other direction led deeper into the woods. No trail on the far bank that I remembered. Just tree line and frozen slope. I think about the math of the moment more than anything else. The geometry of it. How a position that feels like the middle of nowhere is really just a coordinate. And how coordinates can be reached from multiple directions. Let's keep going, Dana said. Her voice was careful, and even in a way that meant she was working to keep it in that way. She meant keep going forward, toward him, to the bank, to the trail, to the parking lot. We started walking. My footsteps on the planking sound enormous. The gaps between the boards showed the creek below. I kept my eyes forward. He hadn't moved. We were maybe 40 feet from him when he took his hands out of his pockets. Nothing was in them. That registered some relief. Nothing in his hands. But the gesture itself was wrong. Too deliberate. Like something that had been rehearsed. His eyes hadn't moved from us the entire time. Then the sound of a vehicle somewhere on the road above the near bank. An engine cutting off. A truck door slamming. That specific hollow metal bang that carries through the cold air. And then voices. Two or three of them. Loud and relaxed. the way people are when they just arrived somewhere and hadn't settled into quiet yet. It was nothing, just other hikers showing up, ordinary people on an ordinary afternoon. But the sound changed something in the air. The men looked up toward the road, just for a second, and then he stepped off the bridge onto the bank and turned and walked back up the trail. We walked off that bridge fast, not running. Neither of us ran. It felt important not to run, like running would confirm something we couldn't take back. We reached the bank and turned up the trail after him. He was maybe 200 feet ahead of us, walking at a normal pace. He never looked back. In the parking lot, the man crossed to a dark car on the far end of the lot, one that had been sitting in the corner away from the others the whole time, and he got in and drove away. A beat-up pickup truck was pulling in as he left. Three people climbing out, already laughing about something. A dog jumping down from the truck bed. They had no idea. They never would. Dana and I sat in the car for a long time without speaking. I kept thinking about the timing of it, the way the truck door had slammed the exact moment it did. If they had stopped for gas on the way or left 5 minutes later, we would still have been on that bridge. Just the three of us and the wind and the creek below. No witnesses. No reason for him to stop whatever he had been about to do. I don't use the word about to lightly. I've thought about it long enough to mean it. He wasn't passing through. He wasn't there to enjoy the trail. He had positioned himself at the only way off that bridge. It had taken his hands out of his pockets, and he'd been waiting for us to close the last 30 feet. The noise from the road didn't interrupt him. I think it's the only reason we're here. We should go, Dana finally said. Yeah, I said. I started the car. We never reported it. There was nothing to report. A man stood on a bridge and looked at us. That's all that happened, technically. We told ourselves this the whole drive home. We told ourselves this for months. I told myself this for years. Right up until I was scrolling the news one October evening and saw a face I've recognized above a headline, and the room went very quiet around me. And I sat there for a long time before I called Dana. The headline said he'd been arrested, that he'd lived in town for years, that he worked at a pharmacy technician. The kind of ordinary job, the kind of ordinary place that means someone probably handed him their prescriptions and made small talk and never thought twice. That two women who had gone out for a walk together and never come home were connected to him, that he had been there all along, embedded in the daily life of that community. The whole time. She already knew. She'd seen it an hour before. It was him, she said. I know, I said. We didn't say anything else for a while. Outside my window, the October trees were going dark and bare. I thought about the bridge, the creek below it, the blue of the ice. I thought about the van door opening and adults laughing, the sound of it traveling through the cold air at exactly the right moment. I still think about that sometimes. The accident of timing. The absolute randomness of it. That if that truck hadn't pulled in when it did, I don't think Dana and I would be here. Dana and I still talk. We still get together. But every February, without fail, we call each other. We don't always have much to say.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Sometimes we just let the line stay open for a while, both of us quiet on opposite ends, just making sure the other one is still there.